Welcome to the Engage Podcast from Blackbaud, the podcast for people dedicated to purpose-driven work. From nonprofit fundraising and finance to grant-making, education, and corporate social responsibility, we're talking with sector experts and thought leaders about the best practices and latest trends that will help you grow your impact.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of our Engage podcast. We are so glad that you're joining us to hear more about the revitalization of the volunteering programs at Jackson. My name is Andrew Troop, and I am the head of giving and engagement at Blackbaud. And as I always say, it's a bit of a unique role here at our company. In this role, I have the privilege and the opportunity of leading our CSR thought leadership efforts, some of our key CSR strategic partnerships, and I also have the honor of being an ambassador and an extension of our own CSR team, where we offer a very robust set of volunteering, giving, and philanthropy programs for our global Blackbaud employees and communities as well. And I am so thrilled to be joined today by Susanna Berry, Assistant Vice President of Corporate Philanthropy and Events at Jackson. I'd also like to note before we get started that Jackson is a recent 2024 Blackbaud Impact Award winner, winning our Fueling Greatness Award, which is all about turning audacious goals into inspiring results. I know it all started with a challenge that Jackson set for itself back in early 2023, really looking to revitalize their employee volunteerism and employee volunteering programs, which had declined a bit during the pandemic. Something I know that many of us can relate to. The good news is it led to Jackson not only achieving, but far surpassing its initial goals for this revitalization, which we're going to talk about more in just a moment. And so today, as I said, we're going to delve into this inspiring journey of revitalization of the volunteer programs at Jackson and the work they've done to enhance their volunteering and community engagement programs. Everything that included a historical program assessment, the creation of a focused set of goals, a well-defined strategy, and of course, the organized work to do the program rollout and execution. I'd also like to note that as we explore Jackson's strategic efforts during today's discussion, we'll also draw some parallels to some of the critical themes we talked about in one of our recent webinars on inclusive engagement, identifying and removing barriers to enhance participation. We emphasize the importance of fostering inclusive engagement within CSR and corporate social impact programs, something that I think will become very clear as we go through Jackson's story today. And so with that, we'll lead right into introductions. And Susanna, maybe to get started, I'll just ask you to introduce for folks and talk a little bit about who Jackson is as a company. And of course, tell us a little bit about yourself, your role at Jackson, and even a little bit about your journey to where you are today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Andrew. Jackson, we are a financial services company that primarily is providing products for people who are planning for or living in retirement. And in my role at Jackson, I oversee our corporate philanthropy strategy, which includes efforts across the country, primarily focused in locations where we have an office. So that's Lansing, Michigan, Chicago, Illinois, and Franklin, Tennessee. And through our corporate philanthropy efforts, we form meaningful long-term partnerships with nonprofits that build the foundation for people to achieve financial freedom for life. So we work really hard to engage our associates in our partnerships, demonstrating our values in the communities where we live, primarily focusing on efforts with nonprofits that support strong families and create economic opportunities. So I spend a lot of my time supporting my team, managing our budget, and building, analyzing, and reporting on our impact. So myself, I started off studying business management, but began my career working in nonprofit fundraising and development. So I've been on the other side of the street, so to speak, and I really spent that time focusing on grant writing and grant program management. But I had been really interested in CSR in college. I found that intersection of business and nonprofit to be sort of my sweet spot. But at that time, all of my advisors were basically like, this isn't enough of a field for us to even teach you anything about it right now. It was like three paragraphs in my management textbook or something like that. So after a few years in my professional career, I just was fortunate enough to find an opportunity for an entry-level position at Jackson that was coordinating our CSR efforts, communication and volunteer programs primarily at that time, but that was more than 10 years ago. So since then, I have worked in every role in our corporate philanthropy department and am now delighted to lead an incredible group of professional social impact experts across the country.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing not just that introduction, but a little bit about your own personal journey into the field. I think for each of us, our journeys are always quite unique. And to your point, I think for many of us, back when we were doing our education, doing college, university, there wasn't necessarily the opportunity yet to get into the field. So our entry points have always been different. So I love that. And thank you for sharing that. So, you know, as I said a little bit in our introduction, one of the things that was really interesting for you and for your team at Jackson is as you sort of looked at the beginning of 2023, you set out a challenge for yourselves. And you said, we really want to revitalize what we have as our employee volunteerism programs. We've unfortunately, like many other companies, felt a bit of a dip in that volunteerism engagement during the pandemic and post-pandemic. And we're looking for ways to kind of bring back that engagement, really revitalize what the programs mean and feel both to your employees and to the local community. And I know to get started, a big piece of that is really about setting goals. What are the goals and ultimately the strategy for the program? So maybe we can start there. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, what were some of those primary goals that you set up for yourselves at Jackson as you looked at revitalizing these programs? And I think for folks to hear, what were some of the ways that you went about defining and even setting those goals to begin with?
Yeah. Well, really, we had kind of two things happening at once. Like you said, in this sort of post-pandemic return to work environment, we were really looking at how could we come back? How could we return to what we had seen pre-pandemic in terms of level of engagement and service? But needing to do that in a totally new way, having a hybrid work environment was very new for us. And so it really required us to reimagine what it looked like to run our service program and how to structure that and how to re-engage our associates and service as we had done historically. We were also at the same time, we went undertook a strategic planning effort to set a 5-year plan for our program. And we really wanted to do that to make sure that we were aligning our work with the business strategy and that desired outcomes that we could support the business goals. So being able to do those two things kind of at the same time really helped us focus in and make sure our efforts were going to be as effective as possible. And we knew that through both of those things, that by building multifaceted partnerships with nonprofits, we would then be able to engage our associates in this work in a way that would be very meaningful for both our desired long-term outcomes for the program, but also for the engagement of our associates in the most meaningful way. So that was sort of a fortuitous timing that both of those things were kind of happening at the same time and really helped us to think creatively and in new ways. And we went about defining and setting those goals in a large way, reviewing our historical data. So really trying to understand where were we originally. That was a lot harder because pre-pandemic, we were not utilizing the CSR Connect platform with Your Cause and Blackbaud. So our data was a lot messier. And it was a variety of spreadsheets and things like that. So we had to really dig into that and better understand where we came from. And then also know that we had a lot of opportunity ahead of us to better understand our data now that we had the platform and we had much more accurate and real-time data to work with. We did also do a lot of benchmarking. So we looked at things like the Civic 50. We looked at Your Cause's annual reports and just other indices to see, you know, where were other companies at both pre-pandemic and also where folks were, as you alluded to, sort of as we all went through that kind of challenging period. And then lastly, in that strategic planning process, we just really set goals understanding what was important to our leadership, as well as what was important to us as practitioners of the work and where we knew we could make the most impact.
So many great elements there to unpack. I mean, what I love about what you did is, you know, first, to your point, you took the thoughtful time to really look back, to look at what your historical engagement looked like. You took the time to your point, do some benchmarking, which I think is critically important to really understand, well, what are we seeing across other companies, other organizations engaged in this work, other industries, et cetera, to really look at where are those opportunities to potentially set up some realistic goals. And looking at that data, to your point, both pre and post pandemic, to sort of understand what are some of those differences that not only you were experiencing at Jackson, but that other companies were experiencing as well. So I love that you took that thoughtful time. And then most importantly, I'd love to just really give you a shout out for the work that you did to really, as you set those goals, make sure you had the voice of your community partners represented, of your employees represented and of your leadership represented. So it wasn't just a matter of, you know, you and the team taking time to go off in the corner and set your own goals. It was a matter of actually reaching out to everybody else to really understand their needs, their desires, their goals, and where there was an opportunity to really start to align all of that. So that's incredible. Maybe we'll transition from there, though, because goals is such a huge piece of the work. And as we just said, tons of work that went into that. But then there's the translation of those goals really into the actual strategy and the strategy implementation. So maybe walk us through that. How did you start to really take those goals and bring them to life off the paper, so to speak?
Well, it was a lot of work, but as always, really meaningful. So I would say if we take everything and kind of narrow it down, there were three primary strategies that we focused on. So one was that we knew we needed to build awareness through which we ended up taking through existing department meetings. We also knew that we needed to capitalize on what the business needs were at the time, as well as the community needs. So both our nonprofit partners were missing their volunteers, and our business was really missing the opportunity for meaningful in-person engagement, things that had to be in-person, not virtual. And then lastly, we really looked at how could we better engage our associates that serve on nonprofit boards. Those folks are great ambassadors and sort of extensions of our team in both the company and in the community. So we wanted to make sure we had them as best engaged as possible, and quite honestly, that they were providing accurate record keeping practices for their service. So I'll dig into that just a little bit more to give some more context on those strategies. We started what we called our roadshow. So we put together a pretty standard presentation and went to all of the different department leadership and just said, you know, we really think associates are returning to their communities. We're in this hybrid environment. People are missing community a bit. And your teams are also missing opportunities to kind of be together in this meaningful way. So we would love the opportunity to get in front of your department and remind your employees about the ways they can engage with philanthropic programming, both as an individual, but also as a team. And so we really, in that first year, I think really we took that half of 22 and into 23, covered most departments and just spent 15 minutes at their existing department town halls, telling them about our work, reminding them. A lot of new people had come into the company in those years while we were all hybrid and remote. And so they hadn't really been brought into the culture of service that Jackson had pre-pandemic in a way that they could really connect with. So we wanted to make sure we got in front of everybody and they knew what they could be a part of. We also had another kind of tactic around that, which was that we knew we couldn't expect individuals to just jump right back into their previous individual behavior. You know, we all had spent a lot of time being told to stay home, and so it was hard to get folks back to that. So creating an opportunity where departments and teams wanted to be together, and they, like I said, needed something that couldn't be done virtually, right? I think a lot of us in that time period were sort of like, well, why would I come into the office when this meeting could have been on Teams or whatever? So we were creating opportunities for those department leaders to say, you know, we are going to come together for this department meeting, and part of this is going to include a service project that needs to be done in person. So we worked with department leadership to offer team projects that were around their existing meeting schedules. And that was not something we had done very significantly in the past. That was a new approach for us. And so again, that really kind of came out of those roadshows and also meeting that real business need while also being able to meet community need and help us kind of get people back into the swing of things, right? Reminding them of what it feels like to give back and that it's not maybe as hard as they were building it up in their heads to be. That allowed us to evolve that a little bit more. That became very interesting to a lot of our leaders, and a lot of our leadership at the highest levels even then started to rethink their own perspective of how they structure their meetings. So we had some folks approach us for doing large-scale service projects with really large meetings that had never included a service opportunity before. So, you know, our quarterly meetings that include all the senior leadership management from the company, they started to think maybe one of these a quarter could include taking an hour or two to include a service project and really helping everyone to reimagine what it thinks to like bring everyone together. So that helped us to create an opportunity for a new audience that maybe had only sporadically engaged before the pandemic in a much more concerted way. And then lastly, when we reviewed our data from historical to current, we realized that we lost a lot of our board members in that process, that they had not been logging their volunteer service, or maybe they might jump in at the beginning of the year and log one board meeting, but we knew that they were putting in, you know, 50, 60 hours with their board service a year, and they were neglecting to capture that. And board service is a really big part of our culture at Jackson. So we have regularly over 80 associates serving on boards across the country. So losing them was a big hit to our volunteerism metrics, and also just not an accurate reflection of the work happening in the community with that really valuable skilled service. So we wanted to make sure we captured them. So we started really a multi-pronged communications campaign with them to remind them of this. We also simultaneously launched a Dollars for Doers program. So they had a little incentive that they could support their nonprofit with a financial investment by taking the time to log that service.
That's great. I mean, there's so many great elements there. You know, the first part, of course, is the work that you did to assess what you were doing historically. But what I love is that you didn't just look at historical data and try to map goals moving forward. You did that really crucial step of doing the roadshow. And I think that's such an important thing to call out, because I think oftentimes we take for granted, right, when we've had CSR programs and engagement programs that have been running for many years, we take for granted that teams and their leaders know what all of our offerings are, and or we get a little bit stagnant in what those offerings are. And what you had with that opportunity, the roadshow, right, was to not only bring awareness to employees and to team leaders, as you called out, of what all the opportunities were, but it also started to bubble up, as I'm hearing, creativity, right? An opportunity for leaders to really start thinking, well, wait a minute, why don't I structure both a team building and service activity together? And why don't I use this moment of team building and this moment where I'm already potentially bringing the team together for another business purpose and align it to what we could be doing from a service project as well? And in turn, also align that to the needs that you're seeing on the ground in the community. So it's like, it's really starting to align all these things together. And I think that's a really great example of what many of us have been working on over the past several years, which is starting to get this really woven into the standard business and the business cadence and the work of the business, rather than be considered an extra or an add-on or something off to the side. So it's so great to hear that work that you did. And it's really great that you zoned in on some key areas, like you just called out with the board membership and the logging of those board hours and the board service hours, really zoning in on something that you know is critical to your culture, but getting folks to make sure that they understand how critical it is to also report and track that information of the work that they're doing in that service. So I love that. From here, can we shift gears a little bit? And I just want to like kind of dig in one layer deeper and talk about, as you started to go through this revitalization process, and as you sort of assessed your programs and looked at making tweaks, did you have an opportunity to sort of assess, well, where might there actually be some barriers to participation? Have there been any moments where you've been able to sort of dig in and try to understand, you know, are there things that are maybe potentially, you know, preventing employees from engaging? And those barriers can be numerous and different in very different shapes, right? They could be physical, they could be psychological, they could be social, they could be attitudinal, right? So, but what kind of work were you able to do, and or what did you sort of surface through this work that showed maybe some of those potential barriers?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was hard for a little bit not to see just a lot of barriers to participation. It's nice to be on the other side of this and thinking back a few years. But yeah, I mean, coming out of the pandemic, and I sort of alluded to this before, but I think we societally, we put up a lot of barriers, right, to connectivity and to engagement. And we all changed. Our individual psychology was, you know, we were better and safer at home. We got pretty good to listening at that. And then we also had the reality of we had switched to a hybrid working environment. So even after we returned to the office, the vast majority of our employees were working 2 or 3 days in the office. So when it came to scheduling projects and catching people in a convenient way, you know, their schedules weren't as flexible, right? It used to be, well, I'm going to head out at 4 o'clock today so I can stop by the service project and it wraps up at 6 and I'll be home. But when you're already at home, the idea of leaving your home at 4 o'clock to go to the service project and then go back home at 6 o'clock, you know, us humans, we're pretty creatures of habit, and that was a hard habit to break. So we had to rethink of how we could support that. Part of that was looking at department culture. What days were they requiring people to be in the office? Looking at our security data, what days do people badge in the most so that we could structure our programs around the days when people were going to be in the office more? But also just finding ways, like I said, to kind of sneak in service so that people could be reminded of what it feels like. We really did have pre-pandemic a really strong culture that service was something that was just a part of what we do. We're based out of Lansing, Michigan. We definitely have a Midwestern culture of community and service that permeates across the country. And so I think people have forgotten a little bit of how great service can feel to themselves too, right? I mean, it's a great value to add, but it really can be an incredible individual, meaningful opportunity. And so getting in with those departments and teams and kind of getting people to almost be a little bit voluntold. And so they kind of had that feeling and were a little more apt to participate, then helped them remember what that was like. And then it wasn't so hard and it wasn't that difficult to kind of go out of their routine, and then it actually felt really wonderful to be in service together. We also took that same approach to think about, well, can we also look at like our employee resource groups? Again, sort of if they're going to do it all together and it's a little bit more of a part of a community that you're a part of, does that help you to feel, you know, almost a little positive peer pressure to participate? It's not just you having to go out of your way to do it on your own, but you're going to have some friends there and some colleagues that you want to spend time with. So that did help us to kind of overcome some of those barriers. Really, it was just, you know, getting out of the habit and looking at how we could embrace the work from home hybrid schedule. How could we restructure things to know that was going to be a barrier, right? If somebody was home, they probably weren't going to get out. So how could we adjust our scheduling to support that? And then just helping them take that next little boost they need. And we were right, you know, after we kind of got them back on the bike a little bit, things were easier.
That's great. I mean, you're so right, right? Folks just need that little bit of boost, that little bit of like reminder of how great it feels to actually do this work, to do the service, to volunteer. And to your point, we talk a lot about the reality that it has a very positive impact, not just on the community that we're serving, but on ourselves as individuals, right? Engagement has a very positive impact on our own well-being and our own feelings. So it's great that you had that opportunity to sort of remind folks of what that felt like. But what I love most is that you really met people where they are, and not just met them where they are, but met them where they are now. So to your point, things had changed, things had shifted. Folks had now moved into a hybrid work environment. And so it was a little bit of like flexing to figure out, how do we meet you where you are now? Because you're right. If we were already all together in the office, it's one thing to leave the office and go volunteer. It's a whole other thing to leave my home at a dedicated time and go off and volunteer and then come back. It doesn't feel quite the same. And so how do you bend and flex to that? And I think that leads me kind of into my next question. And you've answered it in some ways, but just giving you an opportunity to say, is there anything else that you did? Because it feels like there's quite a few innovative solutions that you came up with as you were really looking at revamping these programs and meeting people where they are. I know you mentioned a little bit about launching a Dollars for Doers program. Certainly sounds like you've launched a lot more flexibility and a lot more alignment with your ERGs. Anything else that you want to just call out as sort of like innovative solutions that you felt yourselves sort of starting to implement with this change?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know if it was innovative in the moment, but something that has always stood out about the culture and how we were able to capitalize on these ideas and really move them forward is having a longstanding relationship with our leadership and having their support, and that they really value and want to see these same results. So it's not just the corporate philanthropy team that wants to see these service levels return. They too wanted to see the service levels return and know that it's a big part of our culture It helps to create a unique value proposition. It helps to create a lot of really meaningful bonds within ourselves, but also in our reputation in the community. And just that it's the right thing to do, that we should, as the financial services company, be able to give back in a really meaningful way. So a little bit of our secret sauce, I think, was just that we had many years of building relationships with our leadership, and that they could trust that we execute, and that we set realistic goals that are, you know, achievable, but also bold, and that we would follow through with the outcomes. So when we asked them to lend their voice to something we were undertaking, or to host a service project for 200 of their leaders, they really had trust that we would execute and do that well, and in a way that was meaningful to the community and to our employees. So it was worth them kind of giving us that grace. So it's definitely something that takes years and years to build. So it's not a quick fix, but really has stood out for us on how we're able to accomplish this. I will say, and just kind of, I've alluded to this a bit, but really having in late 2020 onboarded with Blackbaud and bringing on the CSR Connect platform, it really changed our ability to utilize data to inform our decision making. You know, there's a lot of things that when you're in the work, you think are successful and you think are really meaningful. And then you really start looking at the data and yeah, it is sort of successful, but it's not as successful as it feels like, right? And we wanted to make sure that if we were doing this hard work, that we were putting our efforts where it was going to create the most impact. So things that we could build dashboards where our team could real time see their progress, especially when you have a big goal set that was set by our board. You know, our team was a little scared, right? They were undertaking something that was going to impact the whole company. And so being able to every month at our team meetings, look at how are we coming with team projects? How are we coming with projects with our employee resource groups? And staying informed to where we were to the goal, it really helped to have them feel confident about the work. Where they started the year maybe feeling a little bit overwhelmed by the goal, as we went through the year, it's like, we're making progress on this. You're doing the right things. And so that really built confidence and allowed us to keep growing and knowing what we were doing was paying off. So having that tool available to us really gave us a lot of flexibility. And again, just better informed decision making.
I think that's such an important call out because you're right. I mean, having the goals is such an important first step, but then having something like technology to really help support you in tracking the progress toward those goals and tracking the progress of what you're doing through programs is so important. And then in turn, being able to really report out on what is the result. And in many cases, that result is both short and long term, right? There's going to be some short term results that you see from the work that you're doing through engagement, but there's also long term goals that you're starting to see and that your partners on the ground are able to achieve through some of the work that you're doing as well. So to that end, is there anything that you want to call out as things that you've seen as important measurements for you as you look at the measurement of these programs and you're looking at what are the ultimate outcomes and then longer term impact? Anything specific that's been really important or top of mind for you as you think about measuring your programs?
Yeah, I would say we focus our measurement really most intensely around our percent of employees participating in service. That's our number one indicator that we are watching all of the time. And we're looking at that both as a company level, across locations, department level. And even now at this point, a couple years into this, right, we have department heads that want to know quarterly, where's my department at in terms of our percent of participation? And so we really look at that as our primary indicator. You know, even last year in 2023, I guess we're now here in 25. So last year, but we were able to get even up to 48% of our employee population in service. And so we just keep looking at that number of, you know, how can we grow that meaningfully, but also knowing there probably is a max saturation point to that a bit. And so how can we think creatively about what does it mean kind of the next level down? And then in terms of really our broader work in the community and how we identify partners and support our long-term strategy, we look at the nature of our partnership and how robust it is. So we have learned that our best efforts are going to be when we are not just writing a check to a nonprofit, and we're not just sending a group out one time, but we know that when we have a long-term, multifaceted relationship, that's really where things start to thrive in a way that's meaningful for us and our employees, but also really meaningful to that organization. So we're able to bring our employees in, and you know, we have this great captive audience of almost 4,000 people that can become donors and ambassadors and board members and really engaged with this organization. So to do that, we actually annually evaluate our nonprofit portfolio with three primary indicators. We look at it from an engagement perspective, what kind of impact we're making, and then how our brand is able to show up with this nonprofit. So in an ideal situation, we want to have all three of those things activated with a partner. We know that that's not realistic for our entire portfolio, so we do set some goals around our percentages of how much we want to have of that. But we're really hoping to have a meaningful number of partners where we're kind of firing on all cylinders. And then we also have a certain amount that we know are kind of in the pipeline that we're growing and building. And so maybe we're just at the beginning of that relationship, but we really see it as a comprehensive strategy of making sure we have an appropriate amount of engagement between those three areas. So when we do this, we're really trying to look at, like, is this a board member engagement? Do we have employees regularly volunteering? Do we have employees regularly donating and requesting matches? Are we investing enough at a corporate level that we're making a meaningful impact on their budget, right? Are we writing a $1,000 check or are we writing a $75,000 check? And so we want to know that between both our corporate grant making and sponsorships, as well as our matching gifts program, we're able to make a meaningful difference to the organization's ability to do the work. And then lastly, you know, we're in a local market where we're really hoping to build a presence for our recruiting efforts a lot. We are a B2B company, so we're not as much looking to help build a consumer brand, but we are looking to make sure that our local community knows that we're here and that we care about the community and that we're the kind of place you want to work for. So we're looking for ways that we can, you know, creatively invest in the nonprofit's work while also elevating our brand with their important work and that it aligns with our values as a company.
That's so great. And I really appreciate you sharing really the approach that you're taking to these partnerships, because that's what's crucially important, right? For that long-term meaningful impact, to your point, both for our own programs, but most importantly for our partners' programs within the community, right? Having that, to your point, multifaceted approach and really looking at what are the ways that through all of the ways that you're engaging with that partner, you can have that really truly meaningful impact. So I really appreciate that because I think it's critically important. So, you know, Susanna, as we kind of round out today's conversation, what would maybe be some advice you'd have for other companies who are starting this journey, maybe now, right now, looking at revitalizing their volunteering programs and looking to achieve some key goals with their programs?
Well, I would definitely say that my first piece of advice is to be sure you're in alignment with your leadership on their interest and capacity for these goals. I think without C-suite champions of this work, it's really hard to be successful. And it goes along, my second piece of advice that goes along with this is really making sure you understand the business needs and how you can be a part of achieving those needs. And I don't think, sometimes it can be really easy to myopically focus on this in a way that is the bottom line, right? Or driving revenue or something that's a bit more surface level. But there's a lot of needs that companies have that are beyond that. So, like I said, one of our big approaches was that we knew our department leadership wanted to bring people back together in person, and they were having a hard time doing that. So we were able to solve a business need that maybe isn't, you know, necessarily related to our revenue goals, but was something that was really important to our leadership. So thinking about how you can be a part of solving a problem for the business. And then I think my last piece of advice is to kind of be patient with yourself and give yourself time to set long-term goals. A lot of this work comes from relationship building, like whether that is building a partnership with a nonprofit that is built in trust and mutual appreciation and understanding their work and how you can be a part of it in a really meaningful way, but also building connections with employees. And then, like I said, kind of buying in from our leadership. So relationship building doesn't happen overnight. So I think you have to be really thoughtful about setting goals that can be done in a realistic time frame, but don't sell yourself short, right? Like set those long-term goals and break them up into smaller approaches so that you can reach some really audacious things, but also know that it's going to maybe take a little bit of time, but you can keep moving the progress forward.
It absolutely takes time, right? Stay the course. So I appreciate that. I think to your point, it's great to have that moment of setting those audacious goals. Of course, doing the relationship work with leadership, with employees, with community partners to really define those goals. But to your point, having the patience is so critically important. Okay, it's the kickoff of a new year. So I'd be remiss if I didn't just ask you, as you look forward, as you look to the rest of this year and moving forward, any thoughts about future goals for yourself, for Jackson, for your programs? What are you thinking as the next step in your goal journey of revitalization?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're always busy setting goals, keeping ourselves focused on what we can do better. So, we're really looking at how can we continue to support the intersection of our two primary objectives, being of strategic relevance to the business while supporting real community need through our programming. So, maintaining our high level of engagement is a priority. And so we want to make sure we stay creative and, flexible with where people are today. But also trying to look at how can we involve that engagement from service that maybe is a bit more transactional one time, and how can we move people into things that are a little bit more in depth and long term. So whether that be an ongoing mentorship program or board service, as opposed to a sort of one and done project. Like I said, we kind of got people back on the bike with those maybe more transactional one and done projects, but we're looking at how can we move people into things that are a bit more transformational for both themselves and also the communities in which they're serving. And then we're also looking at how can we better understand programs that are helping to transform financial future for individuals. So we want to be able to articulate how our funding is providing measurable outcomes towards that. That is our kind of business value, and we want our community programming to align with that. So finding programs that we can engage our employees in meaningful service with financial education, work readiness, and home ownership, things that are helping to, really transform the lives of individuals. And so we want to be able to do that both in our service as well as in our funding practices, but not just do it, but also understand the impact of it, right? I think that's what the big goal for all practitioners in this work is: how can I understand the impact that's happening from these efforts? How can I report on that in a way that is transparent and clear and understood? So, just like everybody else, we're really looking into how can we understand our impact? How can we better communicate outcomes from the work? And how can we make sure that we're focusing our efforts on the things that are going to have the best outcome for our communities?
So well said. I mean, it's one thing to set the goals and to execute on the programs, which is a ton of work to begin with, but it's a whole nother thing, to your point, and something many of us are looking to do, which is really understand what is the ultimate impact that's being felt and that we're achieving through these programs. So fantastic. So well said. Susanna, thank you again so much for joining us today and for sharing your journey and the journey at Jackson, all the incredible work and insights as you've been working to revitalize your programs. And I just want to thank everybody else for joining us today for this conversation. Hopefully there's some important takeaways as you look at evolving and growing and revitalizing your own programs, both this year and forward into the future. So thank you again, and thank you all. And we look forward to seeing you on another episode soon.